America, and to all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host of the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me as always is Chris Elogie. Say hi to the folk, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah. So it is the first day of October, and when I woke up and realized it this morning, I realized, holy shit, this year is almost over.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. Damn. God, just like 2020, it seemed both like the longest and the shortest year ever. Seriously. I don't know, man. I think that's really just like what it's like to live in a pandemic. You're just, you know, just time itself ceases to have, it both ceases to have meaning and yet at the same time becomes all too powerful. It is the strangest fucking feeling ever, but anyway, yeah, so like you said, first day of October, it definitely kind of feels like it, especially down south where, you know, in the autumns we tend to have hot days and cold mornings, and that was definitely today. But you can still definitely see everybody's kind of getting into the Halloween spirit already. I'm seeing decorations outside of people's houses. I'm already seeing the local haunted corn maze that we have here, because of course we fucking have one of those here. And yeah, I'm glad, honestly. This is my favorite time of the year. These last 3 months are my absolute favorite time of the year because it's the weather cools off. It's not as it isn't as humid. People's moods noticeably improve. It's just, it's a great time of year. But anyway, so stuff we're going to be talking about this week. Well, we got a bunch of shit. First of all, R. Kelly. Remember him? Yeah, he went to court. Remember what for? Yeah, well, guess what happened? You can probably guess, because even a blind old woman could tell what it was. We also got some news out of Phil's neck of the woods up in Canada after the world became well known of the awful shit that happened in their residential schools. We also got some news about Congress. You may have been hearing about this, but yeah, we're currently in one of the, once again, as it almost seems to happen, almost semi-annually, the government is on the verge of shutting down, and a bunch of assholes are trying to use it as, you know, as like basically as a hostage to get their shit through. But this time, some good is actually coming out of it, and we'll show you what. And the post office is fixing to suck more. Granted, it already kind of sucked because it's chronically underfunded, but with the guy who's currently in charge, well, it just got worse. Yeah, and we got a bunch of entertainment stuff to talk about as well, but we got all that and more to be talking about on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. Yeah, honestly, I'm just glad it's October. All right, so to start us off, as we always start off, talking about all the stuff we've been up to this week, all our ups and our downs, and just in general the stuff that we do when you're not hearing us speak. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
I've just been busy with work and all that.
Yeah, that's actually the reason why we're recording today, because you got to work tomorrow, isn't it?
Yeah, working late tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
Might be able to stream after that, but yeah, I would put you guys in a weird position for streaming or recording this like an hour or so later than we usually do, which is not usually a great idea anyway.
Yeah. Now, do you usually, like, end up working more around this time of year? Or is this just, like, something that just ended up happening?
It's usually just something that happens. Luck of the draw, I guess.
Yeah.
Essentially, so, this week and next are kind of the downside.
Yeah.
For that, though, the end of next week is... gives me a 4-day weekend, so that's fine with me.
Well, you got that coming for you, so at least
yeah, that means I can get my Switch OLED thing whenever that's available, if it's a midnight thing or a morning thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know about that just yet, but yeah, weather-wise, it's been pretty nice. Mm-hmm. So much so, like, being able to have my AC unit not running mm-hmm. all that much, especially overnight. I can just leave it off. I have it set to turn on at a certain point. But usually doesn't turn on and, like, start going because it's, you know, pretty cool out in the mornings these days. So that's nice and feels a lot better. Mm-hmm. Not having a apartment that's just hot when it's not running
mm-hmm.
A lot because that's an issue, especially because the window I have is facing the east.
Mm-hmm.
So that means for half, for a good half the day or so, it is heating up.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the nice thing about it cooling down is like, no, it's heating up into a decent temperature. So, but yeah, been busy and not really able to do all that much this week. So been just kind of watching more of The Simpsons. I'm in nearing the end of season 4, I think.
Yeah.
So I've gone through a lot of good stuff there, like the Marge versus the Monorail.
The Monorail episode, which is universally considered to be the best episode in the whole series.
It's up there. It's one of Conan O'Brien's episodes.
Yep.
That he wrote. Trying to think of what other ones. There's the Treehouse of Horror one that's pretty good.
Well, I mean, the Treehouse of Horror ones in general are usually pretty good in general, but
yeah, but the first couple have some okay ones
mm-hmm.
there. I'm trying to get a list of which segments I saw in this one. I know the one that was in the one of the previous ones, which is the like the one that's spoofing Night of the Living Dead.
Mm-hmm.
They got the zombies and they break into the Simpsons house and they go to eat Homer and like knock it on his head and they're like, brains. We need brains. And Homer obviously doesn't have brains. They move on. They're like knocking on like a coconut or something. Mm-hmm. And then there's that whole line where Flanders is approaching them as they're getting in the car. Mm-hmm. And Homer just shoots him with his shotgun. And he's like, oh, you shot this. Or Bart's like, you shot the zombie Flanders. He was a zombie? He just wanted to kill Flanders in this scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, there's the Monkey Paw episode, which is a great one. That's also part of that second one. The one where mm-hmm. that's basically a the one where Bart has his omnipotent powers.
Yeah.
Which was very much a Twilight Zone episode. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, there's also the one where they're Mr. Burns finds Homer passed out in a grave and takes his brain and puts it into robots to be the perfect mm-hmm. worker, but realizes he's as lazy as Homer was. That's a whole funny thing. The mm-hmm. one for three, let's see, there's the... Oh, yeah, the one where he buys Bart the Haunted Doll, Krusty the Clown mm-hmm. doll. That one's really good.
Oh, yeah.
The King Kong spoof, King Homer,
mm-hmm.
where he gets tired climbing up to, like, the second floor of the building before he passes out. Yeah, that's where the zombie one is in this episode. That one's just a really good one.
Yeah.
A nice spoof on things.
Mm.
Especially when they put out the spell that just gets him to go back. This guy's going into his John Smith grave, and he's like, wait a minute, I'm John Smith. John Smith, 1884? Oh, my bad. Kind of mm-hmm. thing. But yeah, lots of good episodes in this season here. As for games, been playing some more Rocket League, enjoying that, getting a better run of things here than I was last week. So that's mm-hmm. been fun. Yeah, I got my Kickstarter code for Away, the survival mm-hmm. series. That is out now on PS5, PS4, and PC. I did a stream for that last night.
Mm-hmm.
Liking that game, it's definitely a bit rough around the edges.
Mm-hmm.
There was a weird issue I was having. So at the beginning of it is this whole storm is going on this island.
Mm.
You would play as a sugar glider. So we're going with your, I think your mom and dad sugar gliders.
Mm-hmm.
These are kind of a family unit moving around.
Mm-hmm.
There was like this weird like ghosting going on as I moved the screen. That was weird. It might have been like motion blur or something, because once I turned that off, it was no longer happening in the regular game. So maybe that was it. But had some weird bugs would happen on occasion. Ran into a couple of spots where I was just having some issues. So as a sugar glider, you know, at times you can go glide around. They had one sequence where you're getting chased up this tree by a spider. And then you're supposed to jump off as you're going after this vulture. It has, say, kidnapped some family of yours. So you're gliding. You're supposed to glide through these big rock structures onto this log that's floating down this river, and had a hell of a time trying to land on it consistently. Because you land on that, and then you jump over to another one that's going down the next part of this waterfall. So you go down and glide through some more areas, and just having trouble where randomly it would decide that the controls were inverted. Supposed to be, so I would be holding up to kind of be going forward and kind of keeping my aim going upward. Then it would just be like, it's just start dive bombing straight down for no reason. Just annoying things like that, but for the most part, the game is a lot of fun. Looks pretty nice. It's not like a looker of a game. You can definitely tell it's a game made on a small budget and all that kind of stuff, so been enjoying it. Did have a nasty little sequence where you're trying to escape to a safe place with your family, and you're going into like a spider's nest of sorts. So you're fighting off a lot of these spiders and some real nasty buggers there. That kind of stuff. And so yeah, it's a neat little game. I'm going to definitely check out some more of this. So is that, and also got a new game on Steam that just came out pretty recently called Gas Station Simulator, which is essentially a game where you, for whatever reason, are driving on this highway. You see this like abandoned gas station. You decide, I'm going to buy this. And I think you find out that it's used to be your grandfather's gas station or something. It's like a family gas station that you never knew about. I don't know who you bought it from that, you know, didn't make this known. But your uncle is kind of your tutorial telling you about how to run it and all this kind of stuff. But it's in bad shape. Like, you go and have to pick off the boards that are boarding up the doors and the windows and that. Going into the dumpster, picking up trash, all this kind of stuff. You have to do the gas by hand. It's very much like an old school style of gas station. Like dispenser kind of thing. You're trying to, and it has like a typical kind of like a meter for filling that up. Kind of like a speedometer. But you're trying to hit the, as close as you can to the level that they need filled up. Because you don't want to obviously go over and waste gas. That kind of thing. You also got other parts of the station that you gotta, you know, dig up all this sand, excess sand, and dump it somewhere. I guess you're gonna have like a parking lot and some other stuff. A lot of weird little things. I had one weird like event thing that can happen that's basically this annoying kid that works at a, or it's the son of some construction worker that's working nearby, decides to come in like spray paint the sides of your station with like weird kid curse words kind of stuff. So you have to like throw shit at him, tell him to get the fuck out kind of thing. That I had to go and then just paint the walls. So there's a lot of little things there. It's kind of neat. I'm hoping there's less of the annoying event stuff, because otherwise it could be a pretty nice chill game. So that's been pretty much it for me. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I am still playing Tales of Arise. In fact, I'm pretty sure I'm almost at the end of it. But yeah, I got to tell you, by the time you get towards the end of this game, the whole, I mean, again, it's typical of a Tales series. It goes way off the deep end and turns into like some straight up like Lovecraftian shit. It really does. I'm not going to spoil it, but by the time you actually like manage to leave the planet of Donna and go to Linnea and then Rena, it's like the whole scope of the game completely fucking changes. And it's one of those things where it's like the whole time it was hiding in plain sight, but you only notice it until somebody points it out to you. And holy shit, this game is absolutely the best written in the series by far. Like, no question whatsoever. Damn, it is good. But yeah, so expect my review for the game to be probably, hopefully by the end of next week, because I have a lot of stuff to say about it. It is definitely worth talking about. Other than that, I also finished Chapter 2 of Deltarune. And yeah, that game gets surprisingly difficult towards the end. Because it essentially, it sort of turned, the boss battle of that game, the final boss battle, is essentially like a sort of send-up of Super Punch-Out, and it's just as hard as Punch-Out can be. Especially since much like Punch-Out, you also have to go three rounds with the individual you're fighting. But it ties into like some of the stuff you ended up doing in Chapter 1. It also brings back some characters from Chapter 1. And it ends on just one hell of a cliffhanger, which makes me really want to see the next 5 chapters that are supposed to be released, because apparently there's supposed to be 7 chapters in total. And yeah, it was damn good. I mean, it's free, so I mean, what have you got to lose? But you know, other than your free time, because it's a lot of fun, and also legitimately hilarious at times too. So, doing that, and it is of course now October, which means it's now time for horror movies to start making their appearances everywhere. I mean, let's be honest, horror movies are good any time of the year, but we, at least in American and Western culture, at least sort of heavily, you know, view it as sort of like an October thing because of Halloween and everything. So this weekend, I'm going to be watching the original 1954 version of Gojira, the film that introduced the world to Godzilla. And I got to tell you, compared to every movie that comes after that first film, the first film is a very different kind of movie. The original Gojira was produced literally within a decade's memory of the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And the film is very much inspired by the arms race, and especially for the people of Japan, the atomic bombs were very much on their mind, not just because of memory of Hiroshima, but also because the year the film came out, there was a incident that happened near a island off the coast of Japan where the U.S. was doing atomic bombing, and there was a Japanese fishing boat that was too nearby that ended up getting caught in the downwind of the fallout and ended up completely irradiating the fucking boat, and it ended up killing one of the fishermen from radiation poisoning. So when that film came out, it got absolutely trashed by the press because people thought that they were exploiting the very recent memories of all these things. But the film is very much a very naked allegory about the bomb. Godzilla is a creature that is born from nuclear testing, and the effect that he has on the city as he's rampaging is very reminiscent of the kind of damage that you would see from an atomic bombing. I mean, the Godzilla has radioactive breath and affects stuff just as if it was being hit with radioactive breath. There are scenes in a hospital after his raid where it looks very much like you would see what a hospital looked like after the bombings of Hiroshima. People have radiation burns, they're missing limbs. It is a very dark fucking movie, and a very scary one, surprisingly, despite the fact that how cheap and under, you know, and low budget the effects for that movie actually are. I am here to announce that we have victory in the Mouse Wars. Yes, we have finally killed all of the mice that we had been dealing with in our house. And the reason we managed to do it is quite simply with some very rudimentary old school mouse traps. Literally the kind that, you know, when you think of mouse trap, you imagine as a mouse trap, the ones that snap. We managed to get all three of them in two nights simply by putting these fucking things near where they keep trying to raid. And we have not ended. It is shocking how such a simple solution ended up being the most effective. So, yeah. Nerdly enough, but, yeah. So, with that, do you have anything else you want to add, Chris, before we move on?
Nope.
Alrighty then. It is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, several shows back, I talked a little bit about the evolution of the banana. And the reason I talked about that is because, you know, you have those evangelists like Ray Comfort who were trying to say that, you know, bananas are are proof of intelligent design because they're the perfect food that are specifically designed to be eaten by humans. You know, it's handheld. It fits perfectly in the hand. You can just unwrap it and then you can eat it. And it even comes with its own biodegradable wrapper. The thing is, of course, the banana is, of course, the result of intelligent design, just not a divine one. It's the result of the frequent selective breeding that has been going on for millennia to get the modern day kind of bananas that we have now. In fact, the bananas that we have now, the Cavendish bananas that are so plentiful, they did not really become a big thing until after the 1960s. Before that, there was a different kind of banana that was used that was denser and apparently sweeter.
Yeah, that's what all of your banana-flavored candy is flavored
in. Yeah, which is like, yeah, you know, I like the flavor of banana-flavored candy, but I don't like the flavor of actual bananas. It's because it's not the same type of banana. It's the flavoring for a banana that, though still very much cultivated and in use all over the world, isn't as used as much as the Cavendish. Well, I wanted to briefly this week talk about another particular fruit that is also sometimes used by these idiots as example of intelligent design. Once again, it is the use of intelligent design, but it is of humans. It is of human creation. And that is the watermelon. Now, I'm going to take a wild guess here, Chris, and say that you like watermelons, yes?
Nope.
Swinging a miss. All right, then. Actually,
understood them.
Actually, to be perfectly honest, I actually don't like them that much either.
I kind of like the candy form better.
Yeah.
Flavoring.
But for some weird, to be completely honest, I never really got what the big deal with them was either. I always thought they were really just too messy.
They're kind of just like watery and plain tasting.
And I don't really like the texture of them either. They're weirdly flaky. And they remind me too much of like slushies. Almost. They have that kind of collapsible texture to them. It's just, it was always just really weird to me, so I was never a big fan.
I'm gonna have to like eat them in, put them in like a Tupperware container first.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
But
contain all the liquid or whatever comes out.
Yeah. But watermelons are also a really good an example of just how they have been the subject of selective breeding for over several millennia. The oldest recorded example of people breeding watermelons specifically is in ancient Egypt. And in fact, they are mentioned in the Book of Numbers when the Hebrews are following Moses to the Promised Land and they're getting hungry. And then after, you know, God gives them manna, they get bored of manna and they say, quote, it's from verses 4 and 5. Meanwhile, the rebel among, it's Numbers chapter 11, by the way. Meanwhile, the rebel among them had a strong craving for other food. And again, the Israelites wept and said, who will feed us meat? We remember the fish, which we ate freely in Egypt, along with the cucumbers, melons, leeks, onions, and garlic. Here's the thing, though. The melons that they had in ancient Egypt were roughly the size of like a tennis ball. They were also really dense, the skin was especially. And the actual, like, for lack of a better term, meat that you could get out of it was actually pretty small and loaded with seeds, like lots of seeds. One of the, like, oldest examples of a wild melon that you can get in the world is called the citron melon or the tasama melon. It's actually grown, it grows in the places like the Kalahari Desert in southern Africa. And to just sort of give you an idea of what these things look like when you split them open, I have here a, let's see, open engine. I got here an image, and I guess we can include these in the show notes later on. We have here what one of these looks like when you split them open. And as you can see, it's very starchy. There's a lot of seeds in them. And there's also that center white part that's like way too tough and almost inedible to eat, right? That was what like all the old melons used to look like. And then over the years, we started to selectively breed them, in ways to eventually what they looked like today. And the thing is, from everything from like sketches and art over the last few centuries, you can actually like see what an old watermelon used to look like before, you know, the kind of modern versions came to example. So here is a still life that was made by the artist Albert Eckhout in the 1600s. And as you can see the watermelon there. Look, there's still lots of seeds. There's that weird sort of center part that's like all white and starchy. And then, of course, there's all that sort of weird segmentation in it as well. This isn't the only one. There's several other paintings just like that are similar to this where they split open the watermelons and they all have this odd segmentation. And basically, in order to eat them, you would basically have to like physically pick out the seeds, take like a spoon or just your fingers and just scoop out the part that was edible and leave the rest that you couldn't. The version that we know of did not come into existence until really not until like the 17th to 18th to like the 18th centuries. And by that time, they had gotten it to the point where the segmentation had almost completely disappeared. That white part that was famously in there had completely disappeared, but you still had an awful lot of seeds. And watermelon seeds are, they're not terribly, just as with regular watermelons themselves, I'm not typically a fan. And then in 1939, we got probably the modern watermelon's final form, which was the seedless version. Where You can now, oh God, you can, it's like, what has science wrought? But yeah, so yeah, the modern thing, as we know, it's long time selective breeding. And here's the thing though, much as is the issue with the Cavendish variety, these varieties of fruit are so inbred that it's very, very difficult to get them to actually even reproduce. And that's the thing with the seedless watermelons is, obviously, you got to have some kind of seed to get the thing moving. So, you know, eventually it's going to be, we have to sort of reach like a happy medium where we can have all the delicious fruit that we want, but we also got to remember that you got to have something to keep these things to be able to reliably reproduce. Otherwise, the whole thing will go extinct. And much like the Cavendish, we're starting to come to that point where probably going to have the same issue with the watermelon. But hopefully, unlike the Cavendish, we'll get to a point where we can realize, like, hey, there's actually different kinds of watermelons, and they're all delicious in their own right. Except for me, because I fucking hate them. And that is yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid. Yeah.
Like all the perversion of grapes.
Yeah.
Going on where there's like cotton candy ones and all this other shit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just like, just at some point, it's like, dude, just let fruit be fruit.
Like if they're not going to eat normal grapes, then they don't have to.
Yeah.
Fruit doesn't have to be for everybody.
Yeah. But anyway. So, moving on from there, we're going on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we have to start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is R. Kelly, who was found guilty on all counts in his sex trafficking trial. And believe me, this ain't the first. He's got a few more after this.
Yeah, this is... let's see, the trial at the Brooklyn Federal Courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 9 hours of deliberation, jury of 7 men and 5 women found guilty on 1 count of racketeering, mm-hmm. 8 counts of violating the Mann Act,
yep. Which
prohibits transporting individuals across state lines for purposes of prostitution.
Mm-hmm.
Which, yeah, the racketeering charge includes 14 different acts. Or to be found guilty on the racketeering charge, the prosecution had to prove just 2 of those acts to the jury.
Mm-hmm.
The jury found Kelly guilty on 12 of the 14 acts.
Mm-hmm.
He was found overwhelmingly guilty on the racketeering charge. So he was 6 times as guilty than is legally required.
Mm-hmm.
So they're going to be sentencing on May 4th, 2022. So he's got a while to go on that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. Because the stories that have come out, him, you know, essentially having these girls act as his, like, you know, maids, and then sex
slaves. Sex slaves, straight up like sex slaves. That's literally how he treated them. It's,
yeah.
There is no getting around it. And
thinking about, like, the, because he was in court before.
Oh, yeah. Remember? The infamous pee-pee tape. Yeah.
Which, I still remember that Boondocks episode.
Yeah.
Like, how the hell are you people still supporting him after all this?
Yeah.
Get on this girl.
Yeah. And yet, everybody forget about the fact that the girl he was peeing on was 14 years old.
Yeah.
Like, somehow that got completely swept under the rug somehow. It was the pee-pee part. Music
they were willing to let it go.
Yeah. And I still remember the fucking Dave Chappelle skit.
Yeah. The song.
Yeah. I'm gonna pee on you. Drip, drip, drip. Yeah. And
like the gallon jug of water.
Yeah. But it's and then, I mean, even before that, there was the shit he was doing with Alia. Like, he married that girl when she was, like, 15 years old.
Yeah.
And somehow that wasn't a fucking red flag for a lot of people.
Yeah. Being talented will do that for you.
Yeah.
Just look at Kanye.
Yeah. And he... I mean, yeah, I mean, these stories were nothing new. They were going as far back as when his first album came out. Already this shit was, you know, starting to make the rounds. And part of the reason he was able to get away with it for so long was because he was basically, because he was the local boy makes good of his neighborhood. They basically worshiped the man.
Yeah.
But yeah. Hopefully this will be the first trial of many where he is found guilty, guilty, fucking guilty. Because he is guilty of a lot of awful shit. And it's finally coming to get him.
Yeah, I guess they consider Aaliyah as one of the victims in this case.
Yeah.
But obviously she can't testify because she died in a plane crash 20 years ago.
Yep, she's been gone for 20 years. Also in stories of people getting what is theirs, the guy who shot up the Capitol Gazette was sentenced to multiple life prison terms this week, equaling to about, well, multiple life terms plus an additional 345 years.
Yeah, just, it's been sentenced really to five life sentences without parole.
Mm-hmm.
By
the way, for those who don't know, a life sentence in legal terms is roughly equal to about 50 or 60 years. Which is why if you give them double life sentences, that's 100 years in prison. That's kind of the reason why they have to give multiple life sentences.
And the 345 years are for other charges.
Yeah.
Let's see, 12 felony counts of murder, attempted murder, or assault,
mm-hmm.
along with 11 misdemeanor counts of using a firearm during the commission of a violent crime.
Yep.
So it just piles up to, you're not getting out, dude.
Mm-hmm. You will rot there. But, and then on top of that, a London police officer is getting a life sentence for the killing of Sarah Everard.
Yeah, it's the woman that they stalked,
mm-hmm.
Kidnapped, raped, and then killed her.
Yep, that's right. Really nothing more to add to that.
The guy was accused of using his police identification, COVID-19 laws to trick her into his car in a false arrest as she walked home from visiting a friend in South London on March 3rd.
Mm-hmm.
Said he handcuffed Everard on pretext that she broke lockdown rules,
mm-hmm.
drove her far outside the Capitol, and then raped and killed her.
Yep. And then here's another one of people getting what they deserve. Alex Jones is fully liable for all damages that the jury for his Sandy Hook trials determines he should pay to his victims.
Yeah, there's two lawsuits going on for this.
Mm-hmm.
The judge issued default judgments on Monday against Jones and his outlet for not complying with court orders to provide information for the lawsuits brought against him by the parents of two children killed in the shooting.
Yeah.
Effectively mean that Jones lost the cases by default.
Mm-hmm.
The jury convened to ascertain how much he will owe the plaintiffs.
Yeah.
It seems like he and his attorney just basically fucked around.
Yeah.
And refused to kind of cooperate.
Yeah, keep your eyes on this dude, because I have a feeling like risk.
Yeah, we'll see.
He just didn't take it seriously, which should go a long way just telling you what his mental capacity is, I guess.
One of the lawyers said Mr. Jones was given ample opportunity to take these lawsuits seriously and obey the rule of law. He chose not to do so.
Yep.
Now he will face the consequences for that decision.
Mm-hmm. He fucked around and now he's going to find out. And finally, one of my favorite subjects of all time, Nazi hunting, a 96-year-old secretary for the SS commander of the Stutthof concentration camp was caught after trying to skip her trial.
Yep. She skipped the planned start of her trial on Thursday in Germany. More than 11,000 counts of accessory to murder. She was picked up several hours later after the court issued an arrest warrant.
Mm.
And she left her home near Hamburg in a taxi. on Thursday morning, a few hours before proceedings were due to start at the state court in Idaho. The court issued the warrant and delayed the reading of the indictment until the next scheduled hearing on October 19th because that couldn't be done in the defendant's absence. The accused woman previously had, quote, announced that she didn't want to come to court. The statement did not provide sufficient grounds for detaining her ahead of the trial. Given the woman's age and condition, she had not been expected to, you know, actively to evade the trial. And she had been caught, and the police would bring her to court. Doctor was there to examine whether she was fit to be jailed before the court decides whether or not to put her in custody. Prosecutors argue that the woman's part of the apparatus that helped the Nazi Stutthof camp function during World War II.
By the way, for those who don't know, Stutthof is one of those concentration camps where it's often been wondered if they used to use the corpses to make soap. Yeah. So she was around and took part in all that shit. So yeah, she fucking deserves
things. Despite her advanced age, the German woman was to be tried in juvenile court because she was under 21 at the time of the alleged crimes. This is a nice part. Ephraim Zuroff, the head Nazi hunter at the Simon Wiesenthal Center's office in Jerusalem, told the Associated Press that, quote, if she is healthy enough to flee, she is healthy enough to be incarcerated.
Yeah, exactly.
Her flight, he added, should also affect the punishment.
Exactly. But, so let's see. Fortunately, it's not all awful people. We also got some good stuff that happened this week. And the first is our Heroes of the Week. This Nation of Canada, which recently celebrated their first ever National Day for Truth and Reconciliation in light of the government's Indian Residential School of Policy. Now, Canada is notorious for the longest time for being very cagey about the residential schools. Now, keep in mind, Canada was not necessarily unique in this regard. We Americans certainly had our own residential schools down here. In fact, I'm kind of sure that they got the idea from us.
Mormons did this.
But the difference here is that is the scope and the length of time. The last residential school in Canada was not closed until 1996.
1998, it says here.
Oh, well, still, it's intolerably too late. But it gets even worse because last year, after many, many years of trying to lobby the government to undertake it, they started excavating the sites of some of these old schools, many of which were run by the Catholic Church, and they discovered the mass graves of dead children.
Yeah.
And as you can understand, the First Nations peoples of Canada were very, very fucking angry when they discovered that. There are a bunch of historical churches that are no longer there because they were burned down in fits of righteous, justifiable rage. And now Canada is actually having to take this seriously. Because a lot of the survivors of those, there are still several survivors of those schools that are still very much alive and their families.
1998, those kids would be probably in their 30s.
30s or early 40s, yeah.
Yeah, they had 140 federally run Indian residential schools. So not even like church run. These are run by, you know, the federal government.
Yeah.
And then there were 150,000 indigenous children from their families and forced them to attend the Christian boarding schools in an effort to assimilate them into Canadian society.
Yeah, to, as they used to say, kill the savage, as they said. If you've ever seen that movie, The Education of a Little Tree, which was mostly based on bullshit, but is in fact very much factual in the way these schools were run, you know what we're talking about here. It's basically brainwashing.
Also a lot of physical and sexual abuse happened there.
violence and murder, as it eventually turned out, as we now know. It's one of those things that, you know, we here in America, we often, at least us on the left, we like to kind of sort of, not so much idolize Canada, but we like to think like, you know, we could be like Canada. They do so many things better than we do. But Canada's got a lot of skeletons in its closet too, man. And this is one of them.
Yeah, though they're at least acknowledging it instead of...
Yeah, but it didn't happen after decades of violence and heartbreak. So yeah,
they've held, let's see, they created a Truth and Reconciliation Commission as a part of the efforts to kind of try to find some means of reparations.
Yeah, and also to identify a lot of kids because...
Yeah, 2008 to 2015, this commission ran.
Mm-hmm.
The final report had 94 calls to action.
Yep.
One of which was for a federal statutory day of commemoration.
Yeah.
Which also falls on Orange Shirt Day.
Yep.
An Indigenous-led grassroots movement that asks Canadians to reflect on the treatment of First Nations people.
Yep.
Yeah, founded by residential school survivor Phyllis Webstead.
Mm-hmm.
Her favorite orange shirt was taken away on her first day of school.
Yeah. And in another story of racial justice that finally happened but may have come, maybe shouldn't have taken this long, Bruce's Beach in Manhattan Beach, California, will be returned to the descendants of the black couple the land was stolen from in 1924. I think I actually heard about this story first on a John Oliver segment.
Yeah.
Or it could have been from something I saw on the Young Turks, but yeah.
Yeah, this is a bill that Gavin Newsom signed, allowing a plot of beachfront land along the Southern California coast to be turned to the descendants of a married black couple who lost it to eminent domain nearly a century ago.
Mm.
Yeah, it was a... Bruce's Beach was once a thriving resort for black families, owned by Willa and Charles Bruce.
Yep.
Seized by the town of Manhattan Beach in 1924 with the stated goal of building a park.
Yeah.
But historical records compiled in a recent report on the incident, which included a raft of complaints from white neighbors at the time, show the land was condemned because its proprietors and patrons were black.
Yep.
Shocking.
Yeah. This shit didn't just happen in the South, folks. It happened all over the goddamn country.
Yeah, because those people moved around the country. And as well as people that were already there having their own issues. Because, you know, California isn't exactly a white origin state. It's Latino. You don't get cities named San Francisco, San Diego, Los Angeles.
From a bunch of white people, yeah. Well, and they're Spaniards, but the Spaniards are famously pasty white, but that's not what we think about when we think of Spanish, do we?
Oh, not when you're taking land from Mexico.
Yep. But, that was the show proper, and now we move on to the proper show proper. And guess what, folks? We don't have a COVID-19 duck truck segment. Yay!
We had a different shit show this week.
Yeah, because we had something completely subsumed. Congress. I guess we'll call this the Congress can, because it's a bunch of trash. The Congress cavalcade. Yeah, that'll work. So it's that time of the year again when Congress needs to approve raising the debt ceiling so that the government can keep functioning in the near future. I think for a lot of people outside the United States who don't quite understand why we're so obsessed with the national debt here, obviously, the national debt is not something you should completely ignore. You still got to make sure that you can try and pay your, and keep your credit rating okay and to try and pay off your debts at a reasonable amount of time. But governments, by their very nature, rack up a debt. That means that's a sign that it's actually doing shit.
Yeah.
But about 40 or 50 years ago, there was a part of the Republican Party that suddenly decided that the national debt was a great rallying point to get a great sort of group of voters where they can constantly tell these horror stories about how our credit rating is like almost on the end and we're overspending shit and, you know, all this stuff. And then, you know, completely forgetting that, you know, national debt and personal debt work on completely different rules. But because of this, every year, usually every year now, I don't think it happened as much under the Trump administration, but every year now, when the it's time for the government to raise up the debt ceiling, there's this bullshit thing that happens where a couple of Republicans decide that they're going to make this big fucking statement by making the government grind to a halt and just have a government shutdown unless their demands are met. And it happened again this year. Senate GOP has blocked a government funding bill over the debt ceiling.
Yep, Mitch McConnell's whole thing to grandstand for all this stuff.
Yeah, again, this is not unusual for him. He does this shit just about every year.
Yeah, it's,
famously, Ted Cruz kind of became the face of this, but...
Yes, Chuck Schumer says here, the Republican Party has now become the party of default. The party that says America doesn't pay its debts. Let me be clear, what the Republicans in the Senate did tonight was not normal. This isn't your typical Washington fracas, and it shouldn't be treated as such. It has far more severe consequences than the typical political catfight.
Yeah, bullshit. This is actually very normal for them. But yeah. Once again, we got this bullshit going. The Treasury Secretary has said that the federal government could run out of cash by October 18th. And for the record, it doesn't look like that's going to happen just yet, but... Go ahead, Chris.
Well, this is just sort of in the wake of all this fear-mongering from the GOP about this stuff. Now, she came out in this appearance at the before the Senate Banking Committee saying that, you know, if we keep fucking around with this, we may run out of cash, you know, in only a matter of weeks. As the this is right after the Senate Republicans blocked a measure to increase or suspend the debt ceiling. Saying, yeah, it would be pretty bad for the economy.
Yeah. Now, the House has passed a bill to avoid a debt default, but we're not sure how likely, how far it'll go right now. But in the meantime...
This is in the past, as you know.
Yeah.
So this is sort of a quick thing, but that just didn't get anywhere because it was... passed, 219 to 212 along party lines.
Yeah.
And just did not get to the Senate.
Yeah.
Because of this next thing.
Because Congress, around that same time frame, managed to pass a new short-term funding bill before the Thursday night deadline.
Yeah, so they...
That apparently, from what I've read, this should fund the government until, I think, December 3rd or December 10th. Yeah, basically, we got to do this shit again in another 2 months.
Yeah, but yeah, it also includes $28.6 billion for communities hit by natural disasters over the past 18 months, $6.3 billion to help support resettlement for Afghan refugees. And the House was a bit better ratio here, 254 to 175. The Senate okayed the legislation 65 to 35, about 2 hours before the House passing it.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was, and then Biden obviously signed it. So yeah, it's going to keep things going on here for a little bit longer as, cause the GOP is kind of doing all this as well alongside the, infrastructure bill and reconciliation stuff that's going on.
Speaking of which, Nancy Pelosi recently delayed the vote on the infrastructure bill. And this particular this year specifically, this is very high stakes because there's technically two infrastructure bills that are out there. There's the one that is called the bipartisan one, which is I think like $50, $60, $70 billion or something. That is mostly corporate handouts and privatizing a lot of our infrastructure. Versus the I think it's like the 7 trillion one that is large.
This one's like 1 trillion.
Yeah, that is largely, you know, it's that's the budget reconciliation one. And that will include things like not only billions of dollars to go towards rebuilding our infrastructure, but also things like entitlements to 2 years of community college, free universal daycare, more things towards socialized medicine. It would be one of the most extensive sort of one of the most extensive welfare investments since the New Deal.
Yeah, that one's $3.5 trillion.
Mm-hmm. And
they both passed the Senate, just waiting on the House.
Mm-hmm.
They're still finagling things, but then Manchin decided to say he just doesn't support it.
Yeah, and then Sinema decided to join with him. And here's the thing. Manchin is awful because he is nakedly corrupt and actually not very popular with his constituents right now. This week, he was out on his yacht in the middle of a river or lake or something, and a bunch of his constituents ended up surrounding him in a kayak flotilla.
Yeah.
And Sinema, on the other hand, is just a straight fucking sociopath. Like, she not only is delaying this shit, she won't even say, like, what type of compromise or any type of input she wants to have on the thing. Like, she's just, like, really coy about it. And she seems to get, like, this really sick pleasure out of all the bad attention. And apparently, it's almost set that she's going to be a fucking one term in the Senate, because she is fucking, like, she is tanking in the polls back in her district. And the Democratic Party there has said that they're going to primary her. And when she's up for re-election, and I think it's like 3 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's just, we're basically being held hostage by these two people. One of whom is nakedly corrupt, and the other who is just a sadistic piece of shit. And what's amazing, though, is that the media is actually doing something I have not seen them do in a long time, which is, they're actively talking to these senators about, you know, their conflicts of interest, which the mainstream media very rarely ever does.
Yeah.
You're actually getting people like asking Joe Manchin about, you know, stocks he has in the coal companies, and he's like, you got a problem, you best change the subject, which is a direct quote, by the way. On the one hand, I'm not so optimistic that I think it's a done deal, but I'm optimistic enough to think that the negative attention is having an effect on at least Manchin. I don't know about Sinema. Sinema seems to like the negative attention.
Yeah. It's wild, because pretty much everything in the reconciliation bill is widely popular.
With both parties, might I add. This is...
He just doesn't want to support.
Yeah. All this stuff is wildly popular with the American people in general.
Guess what? They're concerned about, you know...
Because they're...
It's roads fixed and...
Yeah.
Trying to combat climate change.
Yeah.
All this kind of stuff.
The reason that they don't is because they know who's going to have to pay the taxes for it. And it's not the working class, and it's not the majority of the middle class either.
Yeah.
It's the senators and their rich donors. And especially Manchin, because, again, he owns stock in a bunch of coal companies.
He's got the Koch brothers in his pocket.
Well, Koch brother, but yeah.
Well, they go by the two.
They still go by Koch Industries, yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the news on Congress right now. It's a bunch of bullshit. But what do you expect? Well, Moving on from there, in more bullshit, the United States Postal Office will be slowing down services and increasing prices for the holidays. Why? Because of DeJoy, the current Postmaster General, who is a massive piece of shit.
Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, beginning today, they are starting to, quote, implement new service standards for first-class mail and periodicals, as long as target delivery time by about 30%. Which I love using things like 30%, because what the fuck does that mean in terms of time? See, some of the changes will result in increased time for some pieces of mail going cross-country and other long distances. But they say 61% of first-class mail and 93% of periodicals will not be affected by these changes. Single-piece first-class mail traveling in the same region will still have a two-day delivery time. First-class packages, however, will be impacted by the new standards starting Friday. Beginning October 3rd and ending on December 26th, the Postal Service will temporarily increase prices on all, quote, commercial and retail domestic packages because of the holiday season. That will not affect international products. So great news.
Wonderful. I want to remind everybody, by the way, the United States Postal Service is a constitutionally mandated organization. Okay. And Ben Franklin was our very first Postmaster General. This is not some like recent New Deal thing. This has been with us from the beginning of the country.
Yeah.
Fuck this guy.
There's an interesting stat here. In August, the Postal Service announced its standard for first-class mail delivery was met 83.6% of the time throughout the quarter ending June 30th, in comparison to 88.9% performance during the same time period in 2020. I was like, is that supposed to be good? Because it's, you know, 5% decrease.
Yes.
Let's see. They also reported a loss of $3 billion for the quarter ending June 30th, compared with $2.2 billion in the previous year. So even losing more money under this guy. So he's not saving the money.
Yeah.
Again, they're not really supposed to be making money.
No, they're supposed to be government funded.
Supposed to be cheap and affordable.
Yeah, because it's supposed to be a government service. But anyway. Next up, Iceland. Iceland, this week, almost had a female majority parliament. Almost. But then there was a recount and confirmed that it was just shy of the number needed.
Yeah, so they have a 63-seat parliament. 30 women were elected. But before the recount, it has shown 33 women were elected, so three spots flipped. It's still pretty good, up from 24 in the previous vote, so a 6-person increase there. So, yeah, getting closer. We're almost the first country in the EU
to
have a female majority.
Mm-hmm.
Only 3 countries have more women than men in parliament: Rwanda, Cuba, and Nicaragua.
Yep.
Mexico and United Arab Emirates have 50-50 splits. Yeah,
that's right. But next up, in some more good news, YouTube is banning all vaccine misinformation content. And this is literally just a blanket ban.
Yeah, they're really cracking down on it.
Yeah.
I guess better late than never, but...
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they... Let's see. Platform announced a change on Wednesday, explaining that its current community guidelines, which already prohibit the sharing of medical misinformation, have been extended to cover, quote, currently administered vaccines that have been proven safe by the World Health Organization and other health officials. They previously banned content containing false claims about COVID-19 vaccines under their misinformation policy for that. So it extends that policy to a far wider number of vaccines.
Yeah,
we've steadily seen false claims about the coronavirus vaccines spill over into misinformation about vaccines in general. And we're now at a point where it's more important than ever to expand the work we started with COVID-19 to other vaccines. And they say they now ban videos that claim vaccines aren't safe or effective or cause other health issues such as cancer and infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically pointing to videos that describe what ingredients are used in vaccines inaccurately, as well as allegations that vaccines contain properties that can be used to track those who receive them.
Mm-hmm.
Users are still allowed to share content related to their personal experiences with mm-hmm. the vaccines, but only if those videos adhere to the site's community guidelines and the channel in question. Mm-hmm. Doesn't routinely encourage vaccine hesitancy.
All right. Good. I have a very low tolerance for that kind of bullshit.
It's gotten out there big time in ways that is just more of a logical fallacy.
Mm-hmm.
In some instances, because people are talking about this vaccine in such a way, it's like you realize you've been taking vaccines throughout much of your life.
Yeah, you had to take a bunch of them before you could go to school.
Like, they're all largely the same kind of thing as far as the effects they give you.
Yeah.
In fact, I even saw on TV recently, first time I've seen it, a commercial about the, the shingles vaccine.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, that's the first I've ever seen one.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that adults don't really know about because mm-hmm. the vaccine has not been around for as long as others.
Mm.
So I'd imagine you and I have not taken them.
Mm-hmm.
We just got chicken pox like a lot of kids our age.
Yeah.
Which is why I got like a little bald spot in the front of my head.
Mm-hmm.
Where my hair doesn't grow in.
Yep. And let's also put it at the point this out. Were you ever in the military? Did you go into the military? Because if you did go into the military, you got a huge round of vaccinations that you probably would have in 1 week than you never would have gotten in your whole lifetime.
Especially depending on where you might be deploying.
Yeah. But that didn't seem to be a problem until this shit. But
yeah, which I saw some video like talking about people getting backlash for their personal choices, and like, and your personal choice here affects many other people. It's not just a one person choice.
Yeah.
And talking about kind of making it a political thing. It's like, nobody made it a political thing until a certain 45th president and his party decided to make it a political
thing. Mm-hmm.
Because again, people have lined up for decades when new vaccines came into existence for diseases that people were happy to get rid of.
Mm-hmm.
Only now is there a huge fight against it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now to something that's just really fucking funny. A Danish museum paid an artist about 84 grand to create pieces of art for them. They ended up getting two blank canvases, both entitled Take the Money and Run.
Yeah, this is a fun thing to see. The artist Jens Honning says the blank canvases make up a new work of art titled Take the Money and Run. That he calls a commentary on poor wages. One thing it's not, he says, is a theft.
Mm-hmm.
It is a breach of contract, and breach of contract is part of the work.
Because
I think part of this piece was that he was maybe getting paid $20,000 for the commission, and then the rest was some form of means, like what a minimum wage would be. For Danish people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Honning says he would have had to pay 25,000 kroner, about $2,900, to recreate his artwork. An unfair burden. Because they were going to talk about him reproducing art that he had done like a decade old or so. And they say the museum's contract provides up to 6,000 euros or nearly $7,000 for Honning's work expenses. Mm-hmm. And the agreement that RSL receives a fee of 10,000 kroner. It's a viewing fee determined by the government. The museum isn't taking legal action just yet. He signed a contract with the Kunsten promising to deliver the artwork and to return the $84,000. The artist now faces a deadline to get the museum its money back on January 16th when the work exhibition closes.
Mm-hmm.
The museum saying it's talking with him about that deadline. It also acknowledges that Hanning did produce a provocative piece of work. It wasn't what we agreed on in the contract, but we got new and interesting art.
Mm.
And yeah, he's a well-known artist in Denmark for his attention-grabbing projects included rendering the Dannebrog, Denmark's red and white national flag, in green. He also, quote, moved a car dealer and a massage clinic into exhibition buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, a fun little piece. Hopefully they can come to some sort of agreement that this is the actual art. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
This is better than some of the stuff where it's like stapling a banana to a wall.
Actually, I think it was taping a banana. Yeah, good point. Now, first news that will make you, I don't know, embrace the oncoming void of death. The U.S. government has officially declared 23 species of birds, fish, and other species extinct. And for the record, a bunch of species you've never heard of tend to go extinct all the time. But
these are the ones they've been tracking.
Yeah.
Yeah, the U.S. government has been kind of doing a lot of work to search for these various creatures. Some of them include the ivory-billed woodpecker.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, 20 more birds, fish, and other species. I'm not sure there's a list here.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they've had on the endangered list for years. Have been kind of looking for it for a long time. Yes, the flat pigtoe, a freshwater mussel in southeastern U.S., are identified in the wild only a few times and never seen again.
Mm-hmm.
And by the time they got a name, they were fading from existence. Yeah. All 23 were thought to have at least a slim chance of survival when added to the endangered species list beginning in the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
Only 11 species previously have been removed due to extinction in the almost half century since the Endangered Species Act was signed into law.
Yeah.
And Wednesday's announcement kicks off a 3-month comment period before the species status changes become final.
Mm-hmm.
And around the globe, some 902 species have been documented as extinct.
Mm-hmm.
The actual number is thought to be much higher because some are never formally identified.
Yeah.
Many scientists warn the Earth is in an extinction crisis. Flora and fauna now disappearing at 1,000 times the historical rate.
Mm-hmm.
We have hope that maybe some will show back up.
Yeah, which does happen. I mean, that does happen. You know,
they're just hidden so well that
some just sort of go underground for a while. Well, there you know, he just pops right up again.
And they find the easy places to hide where no humans are at. And
yeah,
they can survive.
And we're not just talking recent extinctions either. I mean, for the longest time, that famous walking fish. People thought that thing had been extinct for centuries, and then, one of them just walks up out of the water, and holy shit, there they are. But, also in wildlife, wild birds will be protected by the government enforcing rules again after Trump stopped it, because of course he fucking did.
Yeah. They're going to draft rules to govern the killing of wild birds by industry and resume enforcement actions against companies responsible for deaths that could have been prevented. A longstanding practice that ended under President Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the move came as North American bird numbers have plummeted drastically in recent decades, which is punctuated by the extinction news there.
Mm-hmm. But,
Biden's been talking about planning these rules, but obviously immediately got pushback from the oil industry.
Yeah.
Which has been subject to most of the high-profile prosecutions.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah, most notable is a $100 million settlement by energy company BP after government investigators concluded the 2010 Gulf of Mexico oil spill killed about 100,000 birds.
Yep.
Yeah. Trump administration ended enforcement in 2017. following pressure from oil companies, utilities, and other industries.
Mm.
And the Independent Petroleum Association of America said resuming prosecutions would harm businesses that killed birds through no fault of their own.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, poisoning the water that these birds use and killing them.
Yep.
Sure, it's no faults.
Yeah. By the way, I would like to just say this because it was brought to my mind. If you can afford it, and not necessarily everybody can afford it, but if you can afford it, consider maybe buying some of the duck stamps this year. That money goes a long way to helping wildlife conservation in this country. And if you have one on your person, it will let you get into any national park for free. So, you know, consider doing that. I say, you know, if you can, because, like, they cost, like, $25. But the money does a lot of good, so consider it. Next up, here in the West, for the longest time, we had this thing called the Vinland map. It was a map that was considered to be the oldest known map of the New World, a.k.a. North and South America, that had existed at the time. Because for those who don't know, obviously Christopher Columbus was not the first European to make it to North America. Vikings, specifically Leif Erikson, had made it many years before. And then this week we found out, nope, it's actually the map is a fake. And the reason they found out it was a fake is because of a chemical that was in the...
Yale's been the map's home since the 1960s.
Mm-hmm.
During that time, debate regarding its authenticity has never completely ceased.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a new news release issued by the university earlier this month has likely ended that discussion for good, as experts with the university who analyzed the map for authenticity
mm-hmm.
found throughout it the presence of a titanium compound that was not used in ink until the 1920s.
Mm-hmm.
Researchers also pointed to an inscription in Latin on the back of the map as evidence that someone intentionally tried to make the map look as genuine as possible. The Vinland map is a fake. Raymond Clemens, curator at Yale's Beinecke Rare Book and Manuscript Library, said, "There's no reasonable doubt here. This new analysis should put the matter to rest."
Mm.
Yale unveiled the map in 1965, publishing a book about it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Its existence seemed to serve as further proof that Vikings explored America before Christopher Columbus' arrival.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, supposedly believed this map had been created in the 15th century.
Yeah.
Yeah, the researchers with Macron Associates,
mm-hmm.
with their own testing, declared it forgery in 1973.
Mm-hmm.
Just as with Yale's testing, researchers found a form of annotates that was not used in ink until after 1917.
Mm. Yep.
So that was what the British Museum had concluded.
Yep. So, unfortunately, it turned out fake. But, yeah. Next up, a mega comet will be heading towards our solar system within the next 10 years. Before you freak out, no, it's not going to get anywhere near Earth. It's going to go probably by Saturn, and that's about it.
Yeah, it is a pretty huge...
Yeah, so big, apparently they thought it was a planet at first.
Yeah, when it had been identified back in 2014,
mm-hmm.
It appeared to be much bigger than the Great Comet, or what we call Hale-Bopp, because it was a 30-kilometer diameter comet.
Mm-hmm.
So they initially misidentified it as a dwarf planet.
Mm-hmm.
It was later reclassified as a comet after it showed signs of activity. And yeah, this, now it's named after them, Bernardinelli
mm-hmm.
and Bernstein.
Yeah.
So sort of that. This thing is like 345 kilometers diameter.
Mm-hmm.
Which is bigger than the moons Phobos and Pandora. Smaller than the other moon they show here, Enceladus.
Yeah.
Which I looked up how big our moon is, and that's about 3,500 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
Diameter, so almost 10 times, or 10 times what this thing is.
Yep.
even then, that dwarfs the Hail Bop, which is one of the most well-known comments we've had going around.
Yep.
But yeah, it'll pass through our planetary system at its closest approach about a decade now, near 2031. And believed it'll most likely be about 10.9 AU, which is an astronomical unit, which is the distance between the sun and Earth. Because of course we'd use that as a unit. But at the distance, it will most likely brush by Saturn's orbit.
Yeah.
So yeah, they think it originated in the Oort cloud, which is in the sort of hypothetical zone that encircles the solar system's ends and includes billions of comet-like bodies. But we really still don't know that much about it.
All right. And next up, and some really good news, Mark Hoppus from Blink-182 has announced that he is officially cancer-free.
Yep. He posted on his Instagram saying, "Just saw my oncologist and I'm cancer-free. Thank you, God and universe and friends and family and everyone who sent support and kindness and love. Still have to get scanned every 6 months, and it'll take me until the end of the year to get back to normal. But today's an amazing day, and I feel so blessed. Can I get a W in the chat?" Which he also posted recently. I'm trying to see what day this was. I don't see a date on this one, but that he had started growing his hair back. But it all came back in white. So he's not sure if that's like a result of the cancer treatments. He's talked about, says here, "I mean, what the shit is this? Is my hair growing back white? If it does, I wonder if it'll look more like George Clooney or Doc Brown. I feel like this is still the cancery peach fuzz hair. Maybe my normal hair will start growing again. It's so strange to have hair growing back more on my head while my leg hair continues to fall out further and further down.
Yeah.
Not the bottom of my shins. I've been in chemotherapy for 5 months, and today the hair on my shins decides it's time to peace out. Cancer is weird."
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, that's good news.
Mm-hmm.
Here's if he's just now a white haired boy.
Yep. All right. Good stuff. All right. And next up, this is a story we kind of touched on a bit in the past, but there's been this lawsuit between Scarlett Johansson and Disney about getting proper pay for the work she did on Black Widow, because there's a Black Widow movie, yeah. And this week, that lawsuit was officially settled.
Yeah, terms have not been disclosed. But yeah, this was about how it was, you know, the contracts and all that were set up for a theater release. And obviously COVID came and shit all over those plans. So it was going to be available on Disney Plus for the premium stuff.
Yep.
And feeling like this is a change in the deal that she and her agents would have been happy to negotiate on. But Disney, you know, refused to renegotiate anything about that. And so, yeah, wanting proper payment for that stuff.
Yep.
So, it seems like at least they're happy for the terms that have been agreed upon, but we have no clue what those are.
Yeah. And finally, last story for the night, we found out that the Book of Boba Fett will be debuting December 29th on Disney Plus. So, we got a new Star Wars TV show coming.
Yep. And teased at the end of the season 2 finale for The Mandalorian. Yeah, we'll be following Boba Fett and the mercenary Fennec Shand. That are featured in season 2. So that'd be interesting to see sort of what this is all about. Because it seems like the little teaser is kind of them taking over Jabba Hutt's palace. Jabba the Hutt's palace. See what that is all about.
All right. We'll see what that is. But next up. Well, no, there is no next up. We got ourselves a show. Holy shit. Yeah. We managed to keep it under 2 hours, too. Damn. All right. Well, I would like to remind all of our listeners, if you got a question, comment, something you want us to be on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got links for you in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at Google Play, RSS, archive.org, and pretty much any kind of podcast aggregator you can think of. And so with that, we're going to go ahead and wind it up here. Like I said, it is October 1st, and the fact that the year literally is only a couple months away from ending is insane. But don't worry, we'll be bringing you yet another episode of Wonderful Insanity next week. So, for Chris Elogi, my pal, thank you for being with me again this week. And if you like the show, tell your friends, tell your enemies. They may hate you, but they may like us, and that's a plus in our book. And I'm going to wish you all a good night, sleep tight, and as always, until the end of this fucking pandemic, please go get the vaccine if you can get it. I would prefer, you know, being able to leave my house without a mask at some point in my life. But whatever. Peace out.